Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Monday, July 1st, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. An Oklahoma company's plan to mine gold from a large area around Yakutat is dead and buried, but there's still interest in smaller operations near the northern southeast community. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Walk along the water at Yakutat Strawberry Point, and you'll see a well-used fish camp. Miniature houses with windows and siding stand next to wall tents, Quonset huts, and weather-damaged cabins. There's plenty of driftwood for fires, wildflowers for photos, and seabirds for watching.
He does look a little bit like a cormorant.
There's also plenty of sand. Sand one company claimed could bring Yakutat one hell of an economic boom.
The preliminary sampling shows a potentially commercial deposit of gold and silver on the surface.
That's Tim Cannon of Cross Timbers Forestry in a 2009 interview. His Oklahoma firm conducted field work for Geohedral LLC, which staked claims on about 60,000 acres around Yakutat. The area included beaches, upland dunes, and a nearby mesa. Geohedral said it found strong evidence of gold, silver, iron, and titanium worth a king's ransom. Well, maybe Bill Gates or Warren Buffett's ransom. And then...
it went from something like a $40 billion project to nothing practically overnight.
That's Skip Ryman, manager of Yakutat's borough government.
It had potential to get people really excited and stir up a lot of controversy, but the town held its own. It sat there and said, well, let's wait and see.
Conservation and native groups raised environmental concerns, but backers spread the news that assays, tests that determine mineral content, suggested there could be 35 million ounces of gold. That's about 1,000 tons. Then came word of follow-up tests showing much less mineral content, not enough to be worth mining. Yakutat Municipal Planner Bill Lucy says eventually, Geohedral gave up its claims.
After some of the reports from both the state DNR and the Forest Service mining permitting people expressing doubt, the company went away.
A call to Geohedral's Oklahoma City headquarters was answered by Herb Mee Jr. He was the president of the Beard Company, a major investor, when the claims were filed. He declined to be interviewed, but he confirmed the Yakutat mining claims were not maintained and the effort is long over. Meanwhile, court documents show the Beard Company filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy last fall. That usually leads to liquidation. Yakutat's Lucy says others remain interested in mining, but on a far, far smaller scale.
Those are small mom-and-pop operations. A lot of it's beach placer mining with a pan after a storm, and they can get some pretty good amount of gold up there.
He's seen interest in dredge mining at the Alsek River to the east and the White River to the west, but nothing's happened so far. Lucy also staffs the fisheries advocacy group, Yakutat Salmon Board. He says an operation like Geohedral's could harm fish and wildlife, as well as subsistence and commercial harvests. But small dredge mining could be done in a way that would not damage salmon habitat. This is Ed Schoenfeld, reporting from Yakutat.
A bald eagle found on the verge of death in mid-June is recovering in Sitka. A Petersburg visitor and some local officials found the bird with a damaged wing and getting pecked at by ravens. They called for help, and now the eagle is at the Alaska Raptor Center. Its odds of survival are pretty good, but as Robbie Feinberg reports from Petersburg, the rescue wasn't easy.
Drew Ross arrived in Petersburg a few weeks ago. He was only here for 10 days or so, visiting from California, and the plan was to just relax, spend time with his parents, and maybe kayak a little bit. But that all changed when Ross walked by a tree on Nordic Drive.
And just a little north of Eagle Juice, up on a branch, there was an adolescent bald eagle, and we could kind of tell that its wing was all screwed up.
Ross was concerned for the creature, but he wasn't too worried just yet, so he waited. But when he came back the next day, he saw the same thing. The injured bird was still there, with a broken wing, struggling to fly. In Petersburg, injured eagles like this aren't exactly uncommon. Over half of the bald eagles in the United States live in Alaska, and with its location right on the water, Petersburg makes a perfect nesting spot. Combine that dense eagle population with power lines close to the water, and eagle injuries can become frequent. But Ross was here from California, and he wasn't used to seeing an injured bird. So he decided to help it out, and he gave a call to the Sitka Raptor Center and spoke with a coordinator there. At first, she advised him to get help from local officials, but she knew they were probably busy, so she had another idea.
At that point, she just kind of said, you know, you might have to do it on your own, and walked us through the steps of how to catch a bald eagle.
Ross says that when he first heard that, he was a bit scared. Eagles may look majestic, but they've got strength, not to mention a nearly 8-foot wingspan. But Ross says he quickly learned that catching an eagle isn't too much different from catching a mouse or any other animal.
If you can get a big jacket or a really thick blanket and literally just kind of go after it, whether, you know, it was up in the tree, and luckily it got down onto the beach where it was a lot easier for us. We actually practiced a few times throwing the blanket in front of us and stuff, but, you know, when it came down to it, she said, just don't get yourself in danger and don't try to injure the bird, but as soon as its eyes get covered, it will get calm. It will become calm.
Ross was up for the task, but he didn't want to take it on all by himself. So he recruited a few local officials to help him out. For a few days, the eagle was still too energetic, and whenever they tried to catch it with a few blankets, it would run away or try to hurt them. But 3 or 4 days in, the bird calmed down.
The days went by, ravens started to peck at it, and it was, you could just clearly tell that its wings gotten worse and that it had a lot less energy, and at that point it was down on the beach. After that, we just kind of had a window of time, and it was down on the beach, and it was low tide, and we were able to get down there. It took us probably 10 or 15 minutes, and we had to kind of chase it down, but we finally got it cornered to where we could throw a blanket over it, and then as soon as, you know, we got the blanket over it, it just kind of calmed down because it was dark, and we wrapped it up in a blanket and called Fish and Game, and they brought us a kennel, and we stuck it in the kennel, and I kept it in our garage overnight. Next day, we got it on the flight to Juneau over to get sent off to the Raptor Center.
So the rescue was a success, but the bird wasn't out of the woods just yet. Jennifer Cedarleaf is the avian rehabilitation coordinator for the Alaska Raptor Center in Sitka. She says that when the center received the bird from Petersburg, he was alive, but he had sustained some serious damage.
We did an admin exam on him where we just checked him over to see what kind of injuries he had, and we noticed that he was in pretty good condition except for the inside of his right wing. It was drooping, and we're not really sure what happened to him, but the whole entire inside of the wing looks like it had been cut, or maybe he was in a fight with another eagle and it just scraped open the entire inside of the wing. So he had bones sticking out and tendons were dry from not being, you know, the way they're supposed to be. And we did an x-ray on him and there was nothing was broken, but his wingtip was dislocated and he had all that soft tissue damage to the inside of his wing.
Cedarleaf says that the eagle wasn't in the worst condition she's seen, but it was injured enough that she performed surgery on its wing right away. And while the procedure helped to clean up parts of that wing, she guarantees that it won't fly again.
There's a part of their wing that's called an alula. It's like our thumb, and it helps them when they're flying and helps them change directions and when they're diving. So when our veterinarian does the surgery, she likes to leave the alula attached because it helps to protect the end of their wing. And his alula is not really attached to anything right now. We left it on and we stitched it up to see if it would heal. But there's so much tissue damage there that we're just not sure.
Without that, Cedarleaf says, the eagle won't fly. However, she added that if the bird recovers, it can continue to live a stable life, just one in a zoo or an educational facility like the Raptor Center. As for Ross, he says it's an experience he'll remember for a long time, but he adds that he arrived here as an outsider, not used to the town's culture and wildlife, and he wonders if that may be the reason why he felt compelled to take action.
It feels good to help out an animal like that, you know, especially when it doesn't seem like there's big effort from other people to try to save it. Yeah, someone, you know, that lives in Alaska, they see them every single day, you know, they could see 10 a day. So they're not uncommon, but, you know, I guess coming from California or somewhere where bald eagles aren't very common, you know, it seems just like such an amazing animal, and the last thing you want to see is that thing, you know, die.
Ross is back in California, but he's still monitoring the eagle, calling to check in on him every few days to see how he's doing. As of now, the bird survived its surgery, and the center in Sitka is being patient with it, waiting about 2 weeks to see if it will recover fully. In Petersburg, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
A project once cast as an example of government waste and labeled a bridge to nowhere is getting another look by the state of Alaska. The state has proposed six build alternatives to improve access between Ketchikan and Gravina Island, where the Regents Airport is located. The proposal includes bridge and ferry options. There's also a no-action alternative. A state transportation department spokesman says about $80 million in federal funding remains from a $220 million federal earmark for planning, design, and construction. Congress redirected much of that earmark in 2005, with money ultimately going towards other projects. Part also went towards work associated with Gravina. The community has pushed for increased access for decades. Local leaders see the project as critical to the area's growth. The state of Alaska hopes to save $125 million over the next two decades by reducing the workspace of state employees. Under the state's universal space standards, only certain people will have offices. Those will be reserved for senior management and administrative positions like attorneys or doctors. Those below that level will get a 6-by-8-foot cubicle called a workstation. This will allow more people to be put into smaller spaces. For example, there are currently 60 people working on one floor at the Robert Atwood Building in Anchorage. After the changes, expect 97 people to share that space. The state hopes to implement these standards over the next 10 years. And that's all for Raven News. If you would like to hear a story once again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. Today in Sitka, expect showers with isolated thunderstorms in the morning, highs around 61 with south wind 10 miles per hour. Tonight, cloudy with scattered showers, lows around 52. Tuesday, cloudy with a chance of rain, highs around 61 with south wind 5 to 15 miles per hour. Wednesday, rain is likely with highs around 60. And on Independence Day, chance of showers, lows around 52. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW, Sitka.